This is Kate Gordon from the National Alzheimer's Demonstration Grants to State Resource Center, and today's call, again, is on adult day services. Our call will focus on adult day services for persons with Alzheimer's and related dementias. Our highlights from our speakers today will include a discussion of studies demonstrating the impact of adult day services for persons with Alzheimer's and their caregivers, as well as some examples of state, home, and community-based care systems that incorporate these needs. Our conference call is being recorded today. If you could please take some time to, if you do not have a mute function on your phone, please press *6 your line. In order to unmute it, if you choose to ask questions of today's panelists, you can press #6 to unmute your phone. We will be having four speakers today. In between the sessions with our speakers, we will have an opportunity for questions. Again, #6 to unmute your line. If you need a copy of today's handouts, you can email kate.gordon, receive a copy of the two handouts for today's call. I will be passing over the microphone to Mr. Mike Splain of the Alzheimer's Association.
Hi, folks.
Hi, Mike.
I'm very excited to bring this call to you all today. Alzheimer families frequently refer to adult day services as the lifesaver, and I think it's an important opportunity to focus on the direct services side of the ADDGS grants. Before we get going with introducing our speakers, could we do a quick roll call?
This is Lori from AOA.
Meredith from AOA.
Tabitha Satterfield, Tennessee Commission on Aging and Disability.
Ann Boston and Janet Spaked from the University of Iowa Alzheimer's Demonstration Project.
Tracy Clark from the from Aging Services Bureau in Montana, working on an ADDGS grant.
Harry Wilson and Dorothy Ginsburg from the Division of Aging in New Jersey.
Sally Steiner from the Michigan Office of Services to the Aging.
Hey, Sally.
Kathy Hover and Andrea Hoffman with the New York State Office for the Aging.
Ed Long from the California Department of Aging.
This is Sunny Udo with the Division of Aging in Salt Lake City, Utah.
David Best, Arizona Division of Aging and Adult Services.
Pam Catoliason, the Idaho Commission on Aging.
Hello, this is Hetty from Senior Services in Midland, Michigan.
This is Mel Phillips, the Nevada Division for Aging.
Karen Kessler, Illinois Department of Public Health.
Sorry.
We caught Colorado, but who was our second person on the line there? Sorry, folks.
Dane Kessler, Illinois Department of Public Health.
Janice Price, Nebraska.
Okay, does that round off our call?
This is Jan Halloran with Maine Alzheimer's Project.
And Melissa Gandy and Connie Hudson from West Virginia.
Great.
Paul Bell from Colorado.
Kevin Crane with Aging Adult Services, North Carolina.
Awesome.
Maria Muro from Vermont.
Roxanne Ando, Washington, D.C. I don't know if my name came through before. Jan Halloran.
We got two at once there. Could you please repeat?
Jan Halloran with the Maine Alzheimer's, with the Maine Alzheimer's Project.
And Natalie Kelly from Florida, the Florida chapters.
Welcome.
Frederica White from West Virginia.
Okay. Thanks for the roll call. I'd like to proceed and we'll try to end by, I'm going to estimate at this point, 3:40 Eastern time, because we do have, we'll run a little bit over our 3:30 ending time. And if people have to, I know there are some people who may have to drop off, and we accept your apologies in advance. As I said earlier, this is an opportunity to focus on the direct services side of ADDGS grants. There are a number of studies that demonstrate the impact of adult day services for persons with Alzheimer's disease and their caregivers, and I think there's a renewed interest on policymakers' part about looking at adult day services, particularly in the context of trying to expand access to home and community-based services. So I think the call is timely, and it's timely and timeless. The flow of the call will be this, that we'll hear first from Kristen Siebenaler. She is a consultant recently resigned from RTI, but she's the principal co-author of a major new regulatory review of adult day services. She'll be presenting her insights about what she learned as she reviewed state-by-state certification and regulation of adult day services, and will help us get through some of the alphabet soup, or as I call it, or key terms in use in states that may define adult day services. Then we'll move on to hear from Lynn Court, in turn with Patricia Hunter, both from Washington State, and Lynn, the state of Washington person responsible for the ADDGS grant, and Patricia Hunter, the program director of the Alzheimer's Association, one of the principal grant partners in Washington State. And then last, I'm not sure if you're here, but we hope we've tracked you down with the right number, Jennifer Dexter, who is the Assistant Vice President for Government Relations of Easter Seals. We'll talk about Blue Sky a little bit about if you were as an ADDS project or otherwise to start to find out ways to, what advice could be given about collaborating with Easter Seals and other adult day services providers. So Kristen, from your view of the middle of things, I'd like you to talk about your overview of the highlights of the ASPE report, which was one of the handouts we sent out to people ahead of time and could be available if you need it again by emailing kate.gordon@alls.org. We're not sending the whole report, just the executive summary. But in your exploration that lasted over 2 years, we're all ears to hear what you found out.
Okay. Thank you so much, Mike. Again, the name is Kristen Siebenaler, and I recently spent 6 years at RTI International, located in Research Triangle Park, North Carolina. And Janet O'Keefe and I were very pleased to work on this ASPE-funded study. And I think that we did confirm through our regulatory review and site visits to five states that adult day services can be a key community service for older adults that can serve the dementia population under existing state regulatory approaches and through the Medicaid state plan and waiver funding in combination with other public and private funding, and in doing so also support their caregivers as well. As an aside, I was able to participate in conducting two ADGS case studies, one in North Carolina and one more recently in New York, and enjoyed very much visiting those states. Getting back to the adult day services study, as you know, in the past two decades, while state and federal funding has increased for home and community services, there's been less attention to adult day services, particularly the health or medical model, and also the combined and social model, and in relation to what you all are interested in, also the specialized model that, for example, might serve persons with Alzheimer's disease and other dementias. The purpose of the study was to look at the role of adult day services in the both the health and long-term care systems as determined by state regulations. Additionally, we wanted to look at the operational and regulatory issues facing adult day service providers under different models and under different regulatory and financing environments. And third, we also wanted to look at potential research, what might be potential research regarding elderly persons and medically oriented adult day services specifically. As such, our study included a regulatory review of states, specifically to AD adult day services. We also pulled together a technical advisory group made up of stakeholders across the country, including Jed Johnson from Easter Seals. I see we have an Easter Seals person coming on later. Lastly, we did site visits to five states, Georgia, Illinois, Maryland, North Carolina, and Washington. And there we visited three to four providers. We focused on medical model or combined social medical model providers. Briefly, I'd like to touch on some of the regulatory findings, and I'm trying to relate them also to the dementia population. We found that we had to contact aging staff, Medicaid staff, regulatory staff, just to find the regulations. Some were housed just in Medicaid, some were in regulatory agencies, and others we found through the aging offices. But essentially, states vary considerably in terms of how they regulate adult day and the content of those regulations. However, most states distinguish between adult daycare and adult day health care, and they have more extensive requirements for the health model. However, even though there are many states distinguish between adult daycare and adult day health, some states are moving away from distinguishing by model, and instead they're switching to the term adult day services, and by that they mean services that allow an individual to age in place, whether they be social or medical services. As I said, states vary considerably in their approach. Half license, about 10 certify, 4 license and certify, depending on whether it's adult daycare or adult day health. And then the remaining 13 states have neither licensure or certification. But, for example, in Illinois, they rely on a contractual arrangement for providers to receive public funding. In terms of dementia-specific populations, states generally don't license dementia-specific programs, but they might have additional requirements within existing regulations that spell out, for example, you might need higher staff ratios or additional training to serve that population. To fund, providers of Medicaid-funded adult day must meet applicable licensing and regulatory requirements, and in many states, they also must meet additional Medicaid requirements. In terms of what services are required and optional, we found that adult day service providers are generally required to furnish assistance with ADLs and health monitoring. Where states regulate adult day health as distinct, in addition to assistance with ADLs and health monitoring, you also have the furnishing of services like skilled nursing services, medication administration, and physical therapy, occupational therapy, speech therapy. We found that in terms of staffing, many states specify minimum mandatory staff-to-participant ratios. The most common in over two-thirds of those states with one staff person to every 6 or 8 participants. And as you may know, that's very different from what you might find in the assisted living and nursing home populations. Some states actually require different ratios for serving different types of populations, including those with dementia. For example, in Michigan, it's a 1-to-3 ratio. In terms of training, nearly all states have orientation, initial and ongoing training, but the requirements are fairly minimal. About half the states have special training requirements for staff who serve individuals with dementia. So essentially, we found that we did ask states, you know, are you moving to change your approach? And besides those states like Vermont, which now just use the term adult day services, and they're putting forth the aging in place philosophy. States aren't really switching or planning to switch their regulatory approaches, like, for example, going from certification to licensure. Therefore, it's really important that you know the regulations in your state, you know, if you're considering providing this service or, you know, promoting this service. Mike, if I have a few minutes, I'd like to talk about the site visit findings. Do I have a few more minutes?
Site visit findings on adult daycare?
Yeah, or site visit findings.
Yeah. Okay. Yes, absolutely. Okay. I think you can go to the top of the hour.
Okay. I'll move through quickly. And again, just a reminder, we visited Georgia, Illinois, Maryland, North Carolina, and Washington, and we focused on providers who were using the models of medical adult day services or the combined social medical model. And we found that the providers we visited are providing health and long-term care services to impaired older persons, many of whom are not living alone. However, they're using informal care to allow them to remain in their home in addition to receiving adult day services. Again, in the states we visited, we found that providers were furnishing preventive care, health monitoring, and skilled nursing services to individuals with chronic illnesses and physical and cognitive impairments. Some of the providers we visited were serving those under 65, depending on the regulatory requirements and the funding stream. Providers felt very strongly on their ability to provide both health and long-term care services. Those providing medically oriented services felt they were serving persons successfully under the Medicaid waiver and in some cases the Medicaid state plan, serving those with significant functional impairments, chronic diseases, in many cases persons suffering from the effects of a stroke, and also persons with Alzheimer's disease and other dementias. Additionally, many participants have chronic conditions that require daily health monitoring and skilled nursing services. We asked providers how they defined success of adult day services, and they felt that essentially success to them meant preventing and delaying both assisted living and nursing home placement. And they also believe that success was the ability to maximize their participants' ability to operate at the highest level of cognitive and physical functioning. Providers strongly felt that adult day services played a role in chronic care management as well for community-dwelling adults. As I hinted to earlier, providers offered ADL assistance, medication administration, in addition, health monitoring, health education, and skilled nursing services. Also, in terms of how they delivered services, they felt strongly that it was important to offer different types of programming according to functional level. We found different types of programming within a certain population. For example, the Rush Center in Illinois, which serves persons with Alzheimer's and other dementias, they had four different rooms. So they even broke it down to have separate programming among that population. In terms of, there were several operational issues. Very quickly, I'll run through them that came up time and time again. One thing was, as opposed to nursing homes and other residential care settings, adult day services providers rely on multiple sources to cover their operating costs, and they often struggle in doing so. A significant percentage of their operating revenue comes from Medicaid and other public funding sources like the Old Americans Act and Veterans Administration, but they all said that the reimbursement rate, didn't cover their costs, and many relied on, if they had parent organizations or they relied on in-kind contributions, volunteers, and even reached out to foundations. I think as a result of this, the provider's flexibility is somewhat limited because they're dealing with so many different funding streams, and it's difficult to administer that. Another issue that came up that all the providers mentioned was transportation, and in some states transportation is required, in some states it isn't. Regardless, transportation took a lot of staff time in terms of logistics. Another issue was retention, and this might be a little bit different than the assisted living and nursing home industry, but several providers reported that high retention rates actually for certified nursing assistants, and they attributed that to what they felt was a better work environment, not having to work nights perhaps, that there are fewer participants assigned to you because of the staffing ratios. the general spirit of adult day services as being a community service. And also, many staff persons had long-standing relationships with participants. I think the average we found was over 2 years that participants had been involved in adult day services. And lastly, an issue which I think some of the other speakers are going to be addressing is, you know, the issue of marketing, and that providers felt there was still a perception out there that, you know, or a misperception of adult day services as the adult equivalent of childcare, or that it's only for the rich or old people. And, you know, without a greater public recognition of the role adult day services can play, you know, there's an irony of providers are having to work constantly to try to maintain their enrollment. So the National Adult Day Services Association, you know, now uses the term adult day services, but the, you know, the regulations haven't quite followed. The public funding, you know, terminology hasn't quite followed, you know, that movement completely towards adult day services. Providers felt that overall, again, these are the ones we visited, that the adult day services regulations set ideal rather than minimum standards. They thought that the staffing and training standards, you know, were necessary to provide good care. In terms of, you know, the future of the models, again, they felt that there was some concern that the purely social models were going to go by the wayside because providers are increasingly having are moving towards serving a more impaired population. But they did feel that there was a role for the social model. And, you know, they pointed out that with specialized programs that serve a dementia population that perhaps don't have ADL impairments and medical needs, and that will be a real loss if those types of programs aren't able to operate anymore.
I'm going to cut you off there.
Okay.
I've got three after the hour, and I'm going to move things along. But the picture you've painted to me is that it's not just long-term care or what we used to call supportive or custodial services, and that if anybody walks away from this call with an idea that adult day services in the year 2007 in the United States, regardless of model, are the charming adult equivalent of childcare, we need to erase that from our thinking and speaking. It sounds like there's increased interest in adult day services model because as a delivery mechanism for health care and for preventative care and health monitoring services to maintain a variety of populations in the community.
Right. Essentially, we walked away with the ideas that, you know, one, more research is needed to actually document the long-term care cost savings instead of relying on anecdotal evidence, you know, that it can delay and prevent institutionalization, and two, that other states and besides Washington should, you know, work to analyze their Medicaid data to determine the cost effectiveness of adult day in terms of health expenditures, reducing health expenditures.
And the full report, regulatory report, is online. You have the executive summary. And again, if you don't yet have that handout, kate.gordon@alls.org. Let me turn now to Lynn Court. I want to thank you, Kristen. And we will have some time, hopefully near the end of this call, to pick up on questions. And if for some reason we run out of time, we can always follow up with individuals. I want to turn to Lynn Court, who is a program director at the Department of Health and Human Services, unless that's changed, at the state of in the state of Washington, the other Washington, and the one we like an awful lot. Lynn, what I'd like you to start with for our call is, first of all, can you talk about the basic goals and structure of the ADDGS project in Washington that's currently underway?
Absolutely. Hi, everybody, and thank you for having us here. I'm here in my office with Candy Goering, who is our program manager for adult day services, in case anybody has any questions after our talk on that. And I'm also joined by Patricia Hunter, who can address some of the issues. But the overall structure of our grant in Washington State was based on the premise that we needed to improve the responsiveness of our home and community-based system to the needs of people with dementia and their family caregivers And the way we wanted to do this was by integrating dementia-capable services into our existing state programs. Because anybody who knows the state of Washington at all, we've had statewide respite care for years. We do have a fairly mature family caregiver support program because we started that before the national program. So we've had a lot of experience in trying to support family caregivers and in rebalancing our system towards community care. So one of the things that we were looking at when we started out on this was to work with our area agencies on aging who manage our respite care and family caregiver support programs on a statewide basis. And one of the needs that was emerging as we began talking about this was that the dementia population, although they are served through each of these programs, often struggled to find services that were directly responsive to their needs as caregivers of people with dementia. At the same time, we had been involved with the HRSA AOA grants back in 1993 and had a 7-year grant working with numerous agencies trying to do outreach to minority ethnic populations that were working with dementia. So we had sort of a cohesive group of partners that wanted to work together in addition to the Alzheimer's Association, who was an obvious partner. So when we started down this road and we had started doing stakeholder groups probably a year before we applied for the grant, and talking about what were the needs of the dementia-specific population. And there were a lot of things that came out that we really needed to work on. But what it came down to a large sense, was a lot of it was based on linkages and coordination in the community for people with dementia. So our program across the state is called the Dementia Partnerships Project. And one of our major goals is to increase the partnerships at the local level between Alzheimer's-specific organizations and the organizations that serve family caregivers, such as Respite, the Area Agencies on Aging, Family Caregiver Programs, and the Aging Network that work with this population. So partnerships is just a huge theme throughout our program. And then we looked at the services that we would want to integrate into our existing programs. And one of the things that came to the top during this is that while we do have both adult day health and adult day care in our state, many times these programs are not particularly effective for the dementia population. In fact, we serve a relatively low percentage of people with dementia in these service groups. And we started looking at the reasons behind that in that stakeholder group. And I'll tell you a little bit more about that in a moment. But the other needs that rose to the top were for families to have some dementia-specific consultation services to help them get through their needs and problem-solve along the way, things that were specific to the dementia. Not so much just did they need case management, but they needed somebody who understood the disease process and how that affects their ability to access and utilize services that might be helpful to them, but that they're not accessing. And the other service, so the third direct care service, is family caregiver counseling services. And the reason it's important to understand that we have these three services along with a partnership is that we see them all working together, because we see that a lot of times adult day service programs are not utilized by caregivers because there are numerous barriers that keep them from utilizing them. And so we wanted to have services that not only would help the people once they're in day services, but also some services that might act as a conduit to people be using adult day services. And we saw the family consultation and family caregiver counseling as services that could bring people to day services as well as serve families once they were in it. So the whole service, this whole service package works together, the partnerships, day services, consultation, and family caregiver counseling.
Or at least that was your working hypothesis.
Exactly. That's the way we premised our program, and that's the way we're moving forward.
So adult day services identified as a focus because you had a sense that they were valuable for the Alzheimer population, but there was relatively low utilization.
Exactly.
And that utilization may connect to the fact that adult day services for people with dementia by itself, without family consultation or specialized dementia family consultation and these partnerships, it might not really take off.
Right. We knew that we needed to sort of build the partnerships and sort of have things built around the day services that would bring people to it, make them very appropriate, and provide additional sort of multi-component services for the families once they were in the program. The other thing, in our state, we had several issues, system issues, that were keeping day services from really serving this population well. And those are the things that all states are familiar with, eligibility restrictions, funding limits, the kind of things they're just there. And what was happening in the year before we applied to this grant, we had several adult day centers close or change hands. I mean, we only in our state, we only have day services in 13 of our 39 counties as it is, and we only have 53 centers statewide. So at a time when we knew we needed to position our structure in our state to be serving more people through day services for dementia, our infrastructure was sort of diminishing. And we knew that it was partly because of our systems issues, along with, you know, having an appropriate model. So we saw our task as twofold. One is that we needed to develop a model that would directly respond to the needs of people with dementia, more specifically meet their needs, because they don't fit into our adult daycare and they don't fit into our adult day health in a responsive way that meets their needs. So we needed to develop the model. And then we needed to develop the structural components, both the system of funding, the eligibility rules, those things that would help people to be able to use day services. Because the way our program is funded right now, say through respite care, people are getting an adult day service package, but because of limited funding, they might only get it one day a week. And we know from research that in order to have an effect for family caregivers, we'd like to be able to offer this service at least 2 days a week. So we were seeking to address those kind of issues, learning from what research has shown us to expand the amount of day service that would be available, change the program itself to be more responsive to the needs, and really look at not only the needs of the person that comes in promoting health and wellness, but also directly at the family caregiver. And we have a distinct focus on the family caregiver within our new model. So we're working at the statewide level to restructure those sort of system-wide issues. We're working with our local providers. We have three that are implementing this new model. And they are working on the local level with their own local dementia partnerships. We have a state-level coalition that is supporting the sort of system-wide change. And then we have the local partnerships that are working together to develop, you know, plans to address the local issues around utilization, referral, linkages between the service programs. And I think Patricia could probably address how those local partnerships are working out.
And she's next up. But before I do that, and thanks for that overview, Lynn, Patricia is Program Director of the Alzheimer's Association, and I'm proud to call her colleague and friend for many years. We're aging in place in the Alzheimer's Association. Patricia, before we go on to the Creating the Service Coalition and being on the inside of this partnership, can you just say from a Alzheimer expert point of view, you know, what's your sense of the real and perceived barriers to more Alzheimer persons using adult daycare services?
Well, you know, as I was making out my list for the barriers, you know, what's real and what's perceived and can you really tell the difference between the two became pretty obvious to me that, I don't know, you know, it's pretty much both. So just generally the group that we're working with, people with Alzheimer's disease, in of itself presents a challenge. I think that there's just a general lack of understanding of how the adult day center can be of help to someone who has dementia. And here we are trying to explain what an adult day center can do to the actual group we're trying to reach, which is persons who have dementia and the family caregivers. And, you know, it's tough. I think the person with dementia, you know, they don't understand or accept the need for adult day services. They don't necessarily view themselves as disabled and therefore don't feel that they need the help. You know, that's not uncommon, right? I mean, that's a common reaction that we see not only in dementia but in just people who have disabilities. They don't see themselves as needing help. And then in particular, a subgroup for the person who's in the earlier stages of dementia and also for the younger age person with dementia or early onset, there was even a greater disconnect between how they viewed themselves and what they needed and what they saw in the adult day center when they went out to tour, which was typically an older adult who was frail or maybe a younger adult who had a developmental disability. And this, you know, frankly, was a turnoff. And so, you know, we hear this quite a bit at the association that there's just this lack of connection or visual connection that what the center provides is going to work for the person with dementia. And then, of course, this is also the same for the family caregiver. You know, we can talk about, we all know about all the emotional issues in handing over someone that you care about to a stranger, and so, of course, there's trust issues and guilt issues. But I think for the family caregiver also, they don't necessarily see how the adult day center is going to benefit their loved ones, so that's not an immediate awareness.
I've heard caregivers say it's more work.
It's exactly, and I'm definitely going to talk about that. But, you know, Mike, I want to say that what was a very surprising barrier is that our own providers, our own members of the formal system of support, don't understand what an adult day center can do for their clients. And, you know, I've been doing this a long time, and I'm, you know, pretty surprised by that, that the providers aren't able to articulate how the adult day center can be a benefit to someone with dementia. We understand the respite care piece for the family caregiver. We understand that it gives them a break away from caregiving. But, you know, we kind of have this bias, I think, against people with dementia, and we don't really see the therapeutic benefit that someone with dementia can gain from being in an adult day center. I don't think we all understand what kinds of services, particularly the adult day health centers, can offer with the nursing care and the skilled care. And then, Mike, you mentioned the extra burden. Exactly. We often hear from the family caregiver that it is an extra burden. It's an extra effort to get the person up and going early in the morning, get them ready, dressed, bathed, fed, and onto the van across town to the day center. This is not easy when someone has dementia. There are many points along the way where the caregiver just may be exhausted, may not see the benefit to making all of this effort. So, you know, if you take the typical caregiver who is elderly themselves and frail and they have a spouse who has dementia, this whole thought of the process is overwhelming for them. They may not even try it, or they may try it a couple of times and, you know, then see, you know, there's no real benefit, that it really is more work.
So against this backdrop of what you know about persons with Alzheimer's disease and their caregivers, it makes sense that when you're collaborating with Lynn, that the ADDGS project really has a dual focus. There's two clients, if you will. There's a real focus on the family caregiver, and there's a real focus on the person with the disease.
Exactly, you know, and I think with the care consultation piece is trying to help the caregiver problem solve. How can you get your person to the day center? How do you start that conversation? How do you take care of the practical issues, you know, from transportation to actually making sure that your loved one gets plenty of sleep the night before? So the care consultation piece, I think, can really help with that process.
So adult day services, one takeaway may very well be that for moderate to severe persons with dementing illness, for adult day services to work for them and their family caregiver, there's really, it's not just the center itself that is what's needed. There's also support, information, and support along the way for those bad days as well as the good days.
Exactly.
Can you talk a little bit about the service coalition or the partnership that's been developed in, I guess, King County?
Sure. You know, we started out with just the core group of stakeholders that Lynn mentioned on the state level. So, you know, naturally, we're a provider, contracted provider with the AAA, Seattle-King County AAA. We also have the mental health provider doing the counseling part. We have two ethnic or cultural-specific groups, one serving Hispanic and Latino population, and then the other primarily serving the Chinese population. And then another partner is WADSA, which is the Association for Adult Day Centers here in Washington State. So that made up kind of our core coalition. So, you know, we had many, many meetings.
I've heard that. And the purpose of the meetings was, I understand, to learn from each other.
Well, the purpose of the meetings were to learn from each other. We needed to identify, you know, what did each partner bring and what did each partner lack. And so we looked at, you know, expertise in the disease, which we assume came from the Alzheimer's Association, but also resources, skills, and, you know, most immediately we had to identify the day center. And I think, you know, what Kristen was saying really validates our experience, and that was, you know, who was going to be able to do this work and be able to make it work financially for them. So operational costs were a big issue, and so it really came down to two providers. And then our next step was to kind of formulate a plan in terms of how we were going to share the information internally within the referral network and developing a kind of flow chart or pathway, because we wanted to make it, you know, smooth for everyone. And we also had to identify the existing access points. And I have to say that I think the Alzheimer's Association wasn't necessarily considered an access point, but I think we are now. You know, we're considered a place where consumers can go and be referred directly to this project or just to respite care services.
So the local service partnership has a roadmap, if you will. It's valuable for how you all connect to each other in this coalition, this service coalition, but also that roadmap flips over in terms of how consumers find their way into this bundle of services.
Yes, you're doing very well in leading me here. The consumer, you know, we also had to look at how was the consumer experiencing this process, and I have to tell you that is the other barrier, is that accessing services and understanding all the different ways of getting financial help or the different payment services is very complex. And so we had to put on the hat of the consumer and try to figure out from point of referral to the day they start adult day, what are the potential roadblocks or pitfalls? And so we spent quite a bit of time trying to problem solve that and come up with some preventative or proactive solutions to avoiding those pieces.
Well, Lynn, Patricia, you guys are about 18 months in. What do you think? Are there intermediate results to report about this partnership project and this kind of this service coalition building approach?
This is Lynn, Mike. And, you know, I think I can tell you, we actually spent the first 6 months of our grant working with stakeholders to define what each of our interventions were going to be, including the day services. And as Patricia said, we had a group of stakeholders, and we came together and defined what we thought day services should look like for this population. So we didn't really start doing services until this past, it was like March, April, in the different three sites that we have. So I think initially one of the biggest impacts has been the partnerships themselves in terms of getting people together and understanding what the day service program was, who might benefit, how could they create the referrals and linkages. And I think that in itself has been a huge accomplishment. So, you know, we look at that as a major outcome. We think that the partnerships are very valuable at the local and at the state level. In terms of the sites are definitely serving more people total in terms of their census. We started out with two adult day health centers and one adult daycare center. So we had, the adult day health have had to change their paradigm, and that has been a little bit challenging for those of you who have tried to change existing programs into this new shift of dementia-capable, dementia-specific service. And then the adult daycare had to sort of raise their standard up a bit from the more social model to a little more little widgets of like occupational therapy and family caregiver support and nursing, little widgets put in as needed for people with dementia. So I would say that that's another big accomplishment is doing the models. So they're serving more people and more people with dementia. They're getting more referrals from different sources, including physicians. So overall, I would say, you know, we're moving along. We're still early, and we're having an independent outcome evaluation by the University of Washington. So we'll be looking primarily at family caregiver outcomes over time in this program. And we will also be looking at the sort of health and wellness issues of both the participant and the caregiver.
That's a terrific summary. And again, if anybody wants to follow up with Lynn or Patricia, they're easily found. And if, again, check in with us if you don't have already have their contact information. Jennifer Dexter, have you made it on the call? Going once. Oh my God. Somewhere in cyberspace, we've lost Jennifer Dexter from Easter Seals. Easter Seals, you may not know, is the largest provider organization of adult day services in the United States and Canada. And we were going to ask Jennifer, from her vantage point as the Assistant Vice President for Government Relations, to really talk about if you were going to cold call as an ADGS partner or project director, if you were going to cold call an adult day services operation in your state, what would be on the director's mind day to day. Jennifer's also a national board member of NADSA, which is the National Association of Day Services, National Adult Day Services Association, earlier referenced by Kristen. If you're looking to find the state or either an individual adult day services provider or, more importantly, state associations of adult day services, NADSA on the web is a great place to find them. But I apologize, and Kate apologizes even more, for having lost Jennifer off the call. So at this point, I'll open the floor for the floor. What do we call this these days? There's no floor. We call it the phone for questions and answers. And if you could say who you are and where you're from as you ask your question.
Hi there. This is Ed Long at the California Department of Aging. I have a question for, I think it's Patricia.
Yes.
You were, I think, Patricia, you were mentioning that some of your social model adult day service centers were ratcheting up their care a little bit to include some of the therapies. Was that correct? Was that you?
I think that was Lynn, wasn't it?
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm sorry. I got confused with voices on these calls. I was wondering if that presented any sort of licensing issues.
This is Lynn, and the issue is that we don't really do licensing. We do contracting from the state level for adult daycare and for adult day health.
Okay.
And they're monitored by the area agencies on aging.
Okay.
So we have in WAC, which is our Washington Administrative Code, we have requirements in Washington Administrative Code for adult daycare as well as adult day health. And when we entered into this pilot, what we said is that everybody who was applying to be a day center had to meet at least the minimum of adult daycare requirements.
Mm-hmm.
If they were going to contract as a partner in this grant effort, demonstration program, they had to meet certain elements. We required more social services, more nursing, and more OT, but they're not at the level they would be for adult day health in terms of, you know, what they necessarily need to provide. We were trying to make it more of a, you know, not an adult day health replica, but
right.
Sort of a service therapy professional service on an as-needed basis.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Uh-huh.
So it's a contract specification, not a change of regulation, which is probably a little bit easier to accomplish.
Yeah, that sounds...
And I think in Lynn's point also is it's on an as-needed basis, so it's not bundled necessarily into, it's individually based, I assume, Lynn, not bundled into everybody having to receive a PT, for example.
Right, and what we did have a rate, and we developed a new rate, which actually is higher than the adult day health rate, because we were requiring a 1-to-4 staffing ratio, and our basic day health and daycare require a 1-to-6 staffing ratio. And then we put in little widgets based on an assumption that we wanted to have social service professionals there at least 4 hours of the 5-hour program day, and we wanted to have nursing there at least 4 hours of the 5-hour program day, and we wanted to have an OT available to do consultation and, you know, developing a care plan based on what the person would need and what maybe could be helpful at home for them from the occupational therapy standpoint. So, you know, that's sort of on a consulting basis, the OT. So we developed a rate, and people get what they need.
Any other questions? Goodness.
Jersey Alzheimer's demonstration. Who does the family caregiver counseling and or consultation, and who reimburses it?
Patricia, could you answer that?
Sure. Well, in our county, in King County, we perform the family caregiver consultation here in the office of the Alzheimer's Association, and then we have a mental health provider doing the counseling portion, and our area agency on aging pays for it through the grant.
And this is Lynn. I'll comment as well, because up in our Northwest, you haven't heard about the Northwest model, because we have Patricia's working in the King County area, but we have a little more rural area of our state, Northwest Washington, and area agency that's working up there. They tend to operate a little bit differently because they're a little more rural and they don't have all the agencies to pull together. And their consultation that they're providing, they have two people at their adult day center that can do consultation, and then they have one or two people through the area agency, and then a few contracted, the counselors are contracted from a mental health agency. but it's all paid through the AAA because the AAA holds the money.
And I just have
when you say a little more rural, I mean, imagine South Alaska, folks.
Not quite that bad.
It's not that bad. You know,
Ashland just
three meetings were snowed out.
She's from there.
Bellingham is pretty big these days.
Yeah.
There you go.
New Jersey, you want a follow-up? Terry?
Hi. We do things a little different. We have primarily a social model, and we have an adult day health model. Our adult day health model is licensed and regulated. Our social model is unlicensed and unregulated. So we're working, put some policy and systems in place to sort of strengthen the oversight of our social model. We have an Alzheimer's Adult Day program that is in legislation, and it does have some regulation around it. So it's a program that basically fits into existing adult day centers. So we are finding a problem whereby, let's say, a caregiver is looking for a place to provide Alzheimer's programming, but the most convenient site probably has much younger disabled population. So we're finding some difficulty similar to what Lynn and some of the other speakers commented on.
Lynn or Patricia, is this flow chart something that we could possibly make available to people so they can kind of see this world from the consumer point of view? Would that be helpful, Terry?
Patricia, is that available?
Sure, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah,
well, if you could get it to us, we can have it available either posted online or out as a supplemental handout for this call. We've heard from both coasts. Other questions from the middle of the country? Wow.
There are none from the middle of the country. This is Dorothy Ginsburg. I'm sitting with Terry Wilson here in New Jersey. Just a follow-up question regarding reimbursement. You were saying that right now it's being paid for through the grant. Do you have any plans for how that might be, that family counseling might be paid for in the future, like through Title III e-money, or any thoughts on that?
You're talking about family counseling itself?
Yeah.
That one widget? Well, when we wrote our grant, what we did is we picked out interventions that we felt could fit into the structure of either our respite program, family caregiver support program, or potentially into our COPES waiver, which is our home and community-based waiver. So what we chose is family caregiver counseling could be funded through the National Family Caregiver Support Program. We're hoping we can expand. It's the one thing that is different between our state family caregiver and national family caregiver, but we do think that we will be able to expand the family counseling through our state family caregiver through showing the effectiveness of this intervention. But so actually it could be offered through National Family Caregiver Support Program at this point, which funnels from our office down to the area agencies on aging. The AAAs would have to make that intentional effort to say we want to, you know, make this more available to people with dementia family caregivers.
And, of course, ironically, New Jersey has the same situation, I think, with a pre-existing the Federal Family Caregiver Support Act, State Family Caregiver Support Act, and there may be a very doable add-on service through the predecessor act to the Federal Act.
Yeah, we have a statewide respite care program that's been in existence for 18 years. And
yep.
Strictly state-funded. And as you're saying this, I'm thinking about, you know, we're talking about expanding options in that program. That might be an option. And I think actually we'd be interested in knowing more about the details of the family counseling as you get into the project. If you'd share those with us, I think it would be very helpful. Thanks.
And again, there'll be an evaluation at the end of the project on the impact on family caregivers. And of course, the counseling benefit or the counseling widget, we love that word here, we're all giggling, is directed at the family caregiver, not the person with dementia. So I think you'll have some information that you can use from the project. I have 3:35 in Washington and half an hour later in Newfoundland and Labrador. On behalf of the TA Center team, Ashlyn Anderson, Diane Bronstein, Kate Gordon, Talidia, and Lori Stahlbaum, who I think may have had to leave early, and Melanie from AOA, I want to thank you for being part of this conference call. I'm sorry, did I say Melanie? I should have said Miriam. All right.
Miriam. He didn't really mean anything by that.
I'm getting killed here, guys. Right. It's been a, he and I got home at 1 o'clock in the morning. Thanks for the call. We'll be sending Kate, as Kate has created a apology note for folks to send partners that has the website where these call recordings will be, and it will go out at the end of this call. And as Kate said at the beginning of the call, the recording will be posted in a couple of weeks, along with any supplemental handouts, and we'll make sure you know about it. Thank you.
Bye-bye.